Welcome to the Holy Spirit's Curriculum of Joy podcast. My name is Wanaka Oberhuber, and I'm your host. My guest today is Jeff Higgins. Hi, and welcome to the show.
Wanaka, thank you for having me. It's a real honor and a blessing to be here with you and your listeners today.
I like to start with a question that you can take your time to answer because there's such a broad range of possibilities to answer. How did you come to see the world the way you do today?
Through my experiences, certainly. But I would say through my most difficult experiences more than anything else, that has been the biggest factor in shaping my view of the world today.
Would you like to describe some of those experiences that shaped your view that you have today?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I'm not to say that I haven't learned from and grown from, my summits in life. Certainly I have, and I'm thankful for them, but I really think that my greatest learnings have been during the most difficult times. My mother was an alcoholic. My older brother and sister used to abuse me physically. Mom died in a drunken car accident when I was 11. Three years later, my brother died in a drunken car accident. He was only 22 when he passed away. My sister drank herself to death over an inability to get over. I shouldn't say it. That's not probably the best way to put it, to properly deal with what had happened to us. And she drank herself to death. I pleaded with her, but it was to no avail. After Krista passed away, I had a car accident. And in my car accident, my close friend died. And so that was probably the biggest storm of all, as you can imagine. I spent some time in jail. And through all those struggles and all those difficulties, I feel have been life's greatest teacher.
So when you speak of all this, it must be difficult because there's a lot of emotion around it. Have you found a way of speaking about it that empowers you?
Yes, absolutely. I feel that my story has a purpose. At least I hope it does, right? That empowers me to talk about it, to give it. And I've given it many times. It's hard. It brings up raw emotions, but that's what life is. And life's got a lot of ups and downs, and I think each of them is to be savored in the right way. I'm thankful, frankly, for my scars.
Yeah, it's some people like to use the words that scar tissue holds better the way it was before. I don't know if that's true, but anyways.
Well, that can be. And, one of the things that I've learned along the way is that, learning from our struggles and our difficulties is not compulsory. many people that don't. I say our difficulties can make us bitter or they can make us better. But the choice is always ours. You know, are we going to turn our most difficult moments into stumbling blocks or stepping stones?
Yeah, that's a big one, is to decide how you will interpret what happened, right? Or what is happening. And of course, in miracles, it speaks of how you can't change the world, but you can definitely change the way you see it. And you can get help for that. You can get help for that from within as well. And of course, from others who have walked the path as well, or are walking the path. That's why in this podcast, I say we're walking each other home.
Yeah, you know, I had to make that decision. I had to decide if I was going to be bitter or better for my circumstances. And I looked around me and, you know, I saw what bitter did to my sister. I saw the inmates, the 1,300 or so inmates at the Hamilton County Justice Center. And it was an example to me and a warning of what the bitter life leads to.
Yeah, and there's a lot of different organizations that are out there to help, right? To shift one's view and to decide differently, right? You can always change your mind about things. You can't change the things themselves.
Yeah. You know, Wanika, I say healing happens through transparency and community. And you're absolutely right. That plays out in organizations like the Susan G. Komen Foundation for Survivors of Breast Cancer, or women who are going through breast cancer. That's Alcoholics Anonymous for, you know, people who have difficulties with alcoholism, like myself, by the way. And these organizations are founded on struggle and difficulty, and that's how we heal. We heal in community when we get together with other folks who understand, have been through our struggle, and we open up and we talk about it because we understand each other and we get each other. And that's when healing happens, in my estimation.
I think one of the most powerful recognitions that you can get is that you're not alone, that you're understood, because it's so easy to fall into the trap that you're the only one going through what you're going through.
Yeah.
And so that was a big one for me as well, to discover that there were other people thinking the same thoughts or having similar experiences as I was having. And so and one of the things I say, you know, in A Course in Miracles, it speaks of us being all one, right? And so actually we have to shift this. I'm still working on it, but to shift our view from the idea that we're not understood to the idea that everyone understands us, even those who can't show it at a certain moment.
You know, do you mind if I tell a story?
Go ahead.
So you know, healing happens in community, and who is our community, right? And when I was in jail, I was in a holding cell with a couple other young gang members, and I was still in my street clothes, and you know, we were clearly from different parts of town, and I was just trying to keep to myself, sitting there on that concrete bench in my khakis and polo while these guys had their hoodies and their sneakers on. They were gang members talking about the shootings that they had been involved in and all kind of stuff. And then one of them starts talking about why he's there. And he says, Yeah, I had a car accident, and my son, who was 10 years old, died. And he said, you know, it's hard. And he started crying, and I looked up, and I said to him, I said, I know what you're going through. I understand. And we talked, and we hugged, and we cried. And here we couldn't be from two more different parts of town, two more different life experiences, yet we were community. And I think the community extends a lot further sometimes than we realize or understand, this shared experiences. And it's a powerful thing.
Yeah, like I was saying, you know, you can get caught up into the idea that you're not understood. So that's one beautiful step of healing, is to start recognizing that you belong to a huge community of people who are facing the same challenges and have the same thoughts about it, and are also interested in shifting the way they see it to feel better. And so we're like I was saying, we're walking each other home, and we do get, all of us are get into these struggles, right? And they're different things. And of course, in Miracles, it basically puts it to one thing. It's either thoughts of separation or joining, right? Of oneness. So you're either having the one or the other. Either you're listening to the ideas that say you're separate, or the ideas that say you're one. You can put it into even stronger words, either guilt or holiness. Either you feel guilty or you recognize the holiness in everyone, right? So,
can I talk on that for a moment? You know, guilt.
Go ahead.
I've got a PhD in that one. I had a lot of guilt. My young life, the stuff that all of us always carry around. Did I raise my kids right? Or I didn't, I wish I'd have done something different, you know, I'm guilty of, I always wish I could have done more to save my sister. But I'm guilty of homicide. You know, I killed my friend, and I have a lot of guilt and towards myself. And, you know, I decided early on, Monica, that if I was ever going to return from the depths of where I was to a functional life again, that high-level forgiveness was going to have to play a part of that. And so, you know, I practice that. And, you know, it is so important. And, of course, the first person that we all need to forgive is usually ourselves. Because, you know, we can't forgive anybody else any more than we forgive ourselves. And forgiveness is so important. And just, you talk about guilt, and really that goes back to forgiveness. I'll tell a story. During the trial phase, when I was pleading guilty to vehicular manslaughter, there was a guy who was Chris's friend, who made it his job to stir up as much trouble on this case as possible. He wanted me to serve as much time as possible, or serve as much sentence as possible. He talked to the press, he talked to the prosecutor, he even talked to my friend's family, stirred up a lot of bitter feelings. Probably was the single reason that I ended up going to jail at all for an offense that typically does not see jail time. So he did his damage. A couple years after all of this, he gets in touch with me. And he sends me this letter that I have here and asks for my forgiveness for trying to crucify me. I had already decided that I would forgive Gary, but no, I'm sorry. But you know, I just knew that that's what I had to do, and it was important to him, and I'm thankful for the opportunity to do that. But Gary was dying, and you know, Gary was trying to reconcile before he died, and isn't that what we try to do, right? We try to die in peace. I was happy to be able to help Gary do that, but doesn't it follow that if we want to die in peace, that we should also try to live in peace by practicing forgiveness? And forgiveness is an important part of how I maintain a healthy peace of mind on a daily basis. It is so important to who we are. It is so basic to who we are as people, as human beings. That's what we seek when we know our time is short. It's vital to our health and well-being and our peace of mind, I believe.
Absolutely. And it's a central theme in A Course in Miracles, forgiveness. And it also speaks of forgiveness being forgiving what never actually happened. So nothing bad actually happened in truth, but our thinking produces, when we think in separation thinking, it produces this feeling of guilt, this blaming and so on.
Absolutely. You know, and a lot of times it's all, you talk about blaming. A lot of this is rooted in our desire to seek an answer to the question why. And you know, sometimes there just are no answers, and it disturbs our peace. It disturbs our, you know, when we're seeking answers when there are none. And I've been there, and it's not a fun place to be. And you know, I think that there's great power in being able to let go, and this is instead of saying why, to ask what's next. I just think that that is so critical to being able to move forward in our life without that why roadblock keeping us.
I think one of the things you're referring to is the what if idea. What if it had went differently? What if I had acted differently? What if the other person had done something differently? This whole what if thing, and shifting to the decision that you can find peace now. You can choose peace now, and you don't have to stay stuck with that. And that means, like you said, you decide differently in this very moment. And you have a very different outlook on things, and then your view of what happened in the past shifts as well.
Right.
Because I think that's the amazing thing, forgiveness or healing. One of the things, of Course in Miracles, is very clear about it never happens just for you. It's always something that happens for a whole lot of people at the same time, right? It's so when you heal, it's a healing for many. And the other thing is that these shifts change the past as well, not necessarily the facts of it, but the way you see it and the feel you have for it, and then you start shifting what you see in the past, because we tend, you know, when you feel guilty, you're gonna see you'll be interpreting all kinds of things as reasons for feeling guilty, that it's justified. You're gonna justify it with everything you can find. And if you choose peace instead, you're going to be seeing what all the things that have happened that are peaceful, or all the love that has been there, that's all that's going to remain there for you. You won't see the other things that you chose to interpret differently anymore in that way. you'll see the opportunity to feel love ever more deeply. And I think that's so, so significant. And I'm so happy you're speaking about that. Maybe you'd like to go a little bit deeper with that, because I think that's a very significant topic, how you were able to forgive yourself, because you were speaking about that was the first thing you needed to turn to, is forgiveness of self. And did you discover when you were forgiving yourself that some of the thoughts that you had were actually nonsense? The thoughts that you had about yourself had nothing to do with the truth of who you are?
Oh, yeah. You know, that's kind of a different subject, but we all flood our minds on a daily basis with negative thoughts about ourselves. And, you know, forgiveness, guilt is just one of those. How I, you know, was able to do that, you know, I just, and yeah, it wasn't just me. Obviously, I had my mom, my brother, my sister, a lot of things. Gary was certainly high on that list. God, institutions, you know, let's not forget about that. How many of us have a lot of unforgiveness when it comes to politics? So this translates into every aspect of our life, and we pick these things up throughout the day, and sometimes they're little and sometimes they're big. You know, I just as I pick them up, you know, I learned to set them down by, you know, saying it, by praying it. It was in my prayers, exactly who I forgave and what I forgave them for, and whether I, you know, they needed to hear that from me, or whether they had no idea that they had ever wronged me. You know, I didn't have to necessarily get in touch with people to reconcile all the time. I did on a few occasions, but no, it's a daily thing, you know, because it's that guy that, you know, just took the parking spot from you at the Kroger parking lot. It's the person in business that you feel wronged you, or maybe a coworker. It's your spouse, your kids, your parents. You know, there's a lot of things every day that we interpret as wrongs against us. And I say interpret because they're not all. And a lot of it is perspective. A lot of it is, you know, I just had a case where a guy, I didn't realize it, a guy thought that I was going around him. And I was like, wait a minute, wow, he believed that I was trying to go around him to this other vendor. And I got with him. I said, I had no idea you were working with him, and I am so sorry, you know. And, you know, it's about getting and receiving forgiveness on a daily basis. And I try to do it, what I call radical forgiveness. You know, I'm a forgiving machine all day long. And it helps me maintain my best self, you know, peace of mind. I truly believe that forgiveness and reconciliation, or whatever you want to call it, grace, is one of the key elements of my peace of mind.
Yeah. What do you think of the thought that we are holy, that everyone is holy, and seeing it that way?
Yeah, that's what my Bible tells me, you know. In fact, that was one of the things that echoed through my mind as I tried to nurse myself back to mental well-being or mental health again. Bible says to me, I'm pure, holy, and blameless. Obviously, I'm not. But in God's eyes, he's taken all that away. And I hang on to that thought every day because, you know, I have a lot still every day to you know, and I'm constantly examining what I do and trying to see where forgiveness is needed for me and by me. It's something that I practice as often and as regularly as I can. I say, you know, radical forgiveness. I'm a forgiving machine all day long, and it brings me great peace in my life, Monica.
That's really beautiful. And yes, to think of God seeing you that way, right? Well, what a grace that is.
Yeah. You know, that's a good point. One of the things that I like to do in my mind is change my paradigm. You know, try to understand that the situation may not be as I think it is. For instance, that person that cut me off, maybe, you know, something happened. I don't know. Maybe the person that was rude to me at the checkout counter is having the worst day of her life, for all I know. And there was a story that I vividly remember from when I was younger about that. And I don't know if it's true, but it kind of hits home about this guy who's riding home on the subway in this car. And there was a guy there that was sitting in his chair, and he had five children on that car with him. And he was just kind of sitting there with his head slumped down and just not paying attention, just kind of off in his own little world while his kids were running around and just like terrorizing the train car, totally out of control. And this lady went over to him and said, sir, she said, your children are disruptive. They're disrupting the train car. And you know, can you please do something about that? And he looked up at her and he said, wow. He said, I'm sorry. I just found out that their mother died. And I'm trying to figure out how to tell them. I'm so sorry. I didn't notice. And you know, that story's always stuck with me because of its, I guess it's just its stark poignance, right? Of how the situation very oftentimes is much different than what we perceive it to be. And I try to give that benefit of the doubt anywhere and everywhere I can. That helps me a lot on my forgiveness journey, my radical forgiveness. And, you know, for instance, I'll give you a prime example. So I was an alcoholic, am an alcoholic, however you say it. And, you know, I'm a proud card-carrying member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I think it's found it to be a great organization. And joining AA and getting sober myself helped me to understand what I'd never understood before and what caused me a lot of great pain, which was my mother, my brother, and my sister. Why couldn't they stop? And then when I turned into that myself and I learned about how to stop, how to remain sober, it helped me to understand them and what, you know, why they ended up being the way they ended up. And I'm just thankful that, you know, they were enough of a warning to me that they kept me from, frankly, dying.
Yeah, that's very powerful. A lot of people come through Alcoholics Anonymous to A Course in Miracles, which is very fascinating. I've heard that story very often. So there's similar principles in Alcoholics Anonymous and in A Course in Miracles. And one of them is the faith that there is a power that knows more, right, can help you. And that actually come, and it can come through you, right? So it can help you from within, and that, and to have faith in that. So I think that's, maybe we can talk a little bit about the aspect of faith in the and in trust. And of Course in Miracles, it speaks about trust as well as the main characteristic of what A Course in Miracles calls a teacher of God, which of course is a role that we all can take on, because as a choice, we can choose to teach, so to speak, what we want to learn, which of course in the main is to be authentically ourselves, right? And who we are, according to A Course in Miracles, is love. So we don't need to teach love, but to honor that love and to respect it and to recognize it, and thereby recognize it everywhere we go or where we are at right now.
Yeah, you know, boy, you talked about a lot there. I'm not sure where you want me to start. You know, it is important, I think, to remember that, you know, even in our most difficult times, that, that we're not by ourselves. You know, and I had that, experience, you know, a couple of times myself. On my 40th day in jail, a nun who didn't know me and I didn't know her showed up to see me in jail. And I believe that the veil between us and our higher power is thinnest when we are the most broken. And Sister Karen showed up that day and was able to reach into a deep, dark corner that I was in, where I felt so removed from everybody else's reality that nobody could reach me. And a little old nun who didn't even know who I was, and I didn't know who she was able to reach in and touch me. I have my own thoughts about Sister Karen, but and what exactly that was and what happened there. But, you know, I just, we should all be a Sister Karen to somebody out there. I think that would be a good thing, reaching out to the people that are in difficult times and having difficulties. That's what I'm trying to do with my experiences. And that's, I think, an inspirational way to live a life.
Yeah, one of the topics I like to talk about is the most powerful place to teach from is from where you are at now. Now, how did you come to trust in that? Because that's what you're doing.
You know, I, from a young age, my mother, for all her shortcomings, always took me to church and always instilled faith in us. And it stuck with me my entire life. Now, there's times that God and I weren't exactly on speaking terms. Or at least if we were, the words weren't really kind. But I was always, I always maintain, even when I was in jail and I was mad as heck at God, I organized Bible studies. I tried to minister to people. I still tried to live a life of purpose. At my mother's funeral, they read Romans 8:28, and that says that God can make all things work for good for those who love him and are called according to his purpose. All things is pretty audacious, and it's a verse that a lot of Christians have problems with. But I was determined that I was going to do my best to live that out in my life at an early age. And I continued to have faith through the most difficult times, but I just questioned God's wisdom in breaking me so heartily. And, you know, I felt like Humpty Dumpty. I felt like I couldn't be put back together again. It was more like instead of pushing me away, my difficulties in some ways, you know, were inspired my faith because, you know, I sat there, not in a good way. You know, I sat there and I said, you know, God, I don't know who you think I am. It doesn't escape me that this book, this Bible, my jail Bible, is full of people who suffered greatly, every one of them. They were better than me. I can't do this. I am not strong enough for this. You've got the wrong guy. Please let me die in peace. My relationship with God at that point wasn't exactly the kind that most people aspire to. But at that point, I had somebody to cry out to. That's the time when I underlined this verse in my Bible from the book of Job. It's the Message version. It says, why does God bother giving light to the miserable? Why bother keeping bitter people alive? Those who want in the worst way to die and can't, who can't imagine anything better than death, who count the day of their death and burial as the happiest day of their life. What's the point of life when it doesn't make sense, when God blocks all the roads to meaning? That was the verse that I highlighted in my Bible December the 9th, 2017, while I was in jail. That was my lowest moment, I would say. And we go to the Bible for inspiration, for uplifting messages and all that. I get that. But sometimes, just like that verse gave voice to my anguish and actually, in many ways, drew me closer to my faith. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And I think the Course in Miracles also speaks of the fact that the Holy Spirit can use everything for good to walk you home, right? To bring you back home. So no matter what experiences you went through, no matter what you've done, heard, or said, or thought, there is the power that can use it for good. So I think that's a beautiful way of understanding that you trust that you can teach from where you are at right now, because it can be used, And I think that's really, really beautiful. And I think it's also great that you were able to recognize a kindred spirit who was going through the same anguish you were going through, to realize, yes, this was written down. Someone wrote it down. Exactly the same thing I'm going through right now. And the same question I have, where is the meaning in this, right? What's the purpose? I mean, why? And the other question I thought was very beautiful that you stated was, why me? Why choose me? Why choose me to teach? I mean, I have nothing special. I haven't studied that or this, or I don't know what, right? There's all kinds of things that you think are prerequisites to being able to be helpful, being able to be truly helpful. And then this inner voice, this inner knowing comes along and says, go ahead and teach it. It's time.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and it's amazing what I've been able to do. And I'll just give you my own experience, but I know of plenty more, you know, of organizations and companies that, you know, were started and born out of adversity, out of difficulty. But, you know, for me, yeah, you know, it's this isn't the life you would choose, right? Nobody says when I grow up, I want to be divorced. That not something I've experienced. I want to lose a child, also not something. Nobody grows up and says, I want to be bankrupt or lose my job. Life happens, and it happens sometimes on its own terms. And like I said, we like Job can ask why, right? He starts off that passage I just read with why. But you know, that's just going to lead us to the same answer, which is sometimes there is no answer. And I can spend the rest of my life deeply disturbed by that question. Why did my friend who was sitting a foot from me die and I walk away without a scratch? Why was it him and not me? There's a lot of whys that we can never answer. And that's why it's important to focus on what's next. You know, I climbed Mount Rainier when I was 50 years old, and I raised money for a special needs school in Guatemala. And as I was climbing the mountain, sometimes you look up and you can't see the summit. You look up and it's just like a glacier in front of you, you know, and it's very steep and you got to climb up that. And so you kind of get disheartened because you're already tired, you're exhausted, you're a million things. And I found at those times, as in the most difficult times of our life, when we can't really see the purpose, when we can't really see the goal, that eventually you'll get there if you just keep your head down and keep making that next step. Just keep making those next steps. And, you know, I decided at some point that I would persevere. Maybe it was after Sister Karen visited me. I don't know. You know, that was a decision that, you know, we can make, and we can persevere if we just keep putting one foot in front of the other. I'm nothing special. I've been, you know, given some difficult situations in my life, some self-inflicted wounds. But I've been able to now come to a point where I'm living my best life ever, in spite of, you know, some very challenging circumstances. And I hope that is something that brings hope to people.
Yeah, it's such a big topic, how one can change one's mind or decide to continue or decide to that there is a purpose, even if I don't see it right now. There a way is going to open up for me or whatever, right? There's many ways of stating it, but to make that choice is amazing, you know. And it might be a daily practice. Maybe you get to the point of not knowing the purpose every day, a few times a day. That can be the case too. But if you choose, every time you choose again to continue, there is a way. Things do happen, right? You still find another, there's always another door opening up, no matter what you think has closed up on you. And what I think is also very interesting, often we pursue something where we don't feel that we're really good at it, right? Like God tells you, you go out and speak there. Maybe you're not good at speaking, right? Mm-hmm. But okay, go speak, right? Continue speaking. You know, okay, you mess up there, you mess up in this other place, it all goes wrong, and you still continue.
Yep.
And for some reason, that's the right thing to do. And I don't know why that can be the case, but there's things, you know, where you get inspired to follow a path where you seem to be really, not to be really good at it, right, at times. And then it turns out that because you follow that path, you become really good at it with time, right? Maybe you aren't yet, may not be. Maybe you're just about good enough at the moment, right? But you can become really excellent. Maybe you're just below good enough. Maybe you're not yet there, right? So you have to, but the interesting thing is when there is this power that's saying, persevere, continue on this path, because that's what you're here to do. It's really, really amazing. And I think that's something that you've seen in your family and in other places, how people couldn't do that, right? Or some people did. I'm sure you have a lot of people who have and have come to really beautiful fruits of it. But you know, in these bad situations where you're feeling awful, you seem to be messing up all the time. You can try to be nice as many times as you want. You can try to do this and that, and it's, you still fall short of it, right? And that's where the other thing is, the forgiveness comes in, right? Because you feel guilty about that, but you just are not there yet, and yet you need to continue. I think that's really an important thing, because there is that place where you feel like you're falling short all the time. And yet, for some reason, maybe from an outer perspective or some other perspective, you're not falling short, but you certainly feel that way, right?
Yeah, right. Like I said, we beat ourselves up a lot. Yeah, and you know, what keeps us going, I believe, one of the things that kept me going, and I think gives us that passion, right? Like when I was climbing that mountain, I was raising money to build a school for special needs children in rural Guatemala. And I've been to these places, and I've been in the adobe huts with no water, no electricity, and an open fire where they cook their meals in a room no bigger than my house. I had purpose when I was climbing that mountain. And purpose gave me the passion to keep going when I felt like I couldn't go on anymore. And I believe purpose is just so vitally important, and not enough people that I run into feel like they have purpose in their life. And it's, you know, we talk about, you know, being our best selves and being our best in our head, you know, between our ears, and being our best in life, I believe, in large part depends on our ability to live with purpose. I firmly believe that. And to illustrate that point, there was a friend of mine. He used to be a cop. And as a police officer, he was oftentimes with people who were dying. And he said, you know, he found it curious that in their last 30 seconds of life, they said two things. I wish I had more time. And did I make a difference? Did I make a difference? That living with purpose beyond ourselves is so important to who we are as people, that in their dying moments, that's what people want to know, that they made a difference. And so I think that a lot of people struggle with this, and a lot of people want to live and know their purpose. And they kind of think that, well, you know, I'll wait, my purpose will come to me, and, you know, I'm sure I'll see it, or I'll know it when I see it. And there's some truth to that, but I encourage people to, instead of waiting for your purpose to come to you, that if you want to find purpose in life, do it in the little things. Do it in the things that that you do, like climbing a mountain, you know, and that turns it into, that turns your everyday endeavors into something more than just a middle-aged guy trying to cross something off his bucket list, right? It keeps us going and it gives us passion. Meaning and purpose in life is so vitally important to the way we're made. And I encourage people, you know, another way to find meaning and purpose in life is through our difficulties, through our struggles. Many people are familiar with the five stages of grief: denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. And that was written by Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, who had a protege. His name is David Kessler. And after her death, David Kessler wrote a book based on their work together. It was called The Sixth Stage of Grief, Finding Meaning and Purpose. That very oftentimes we find our meaning and purpose in our most difficult moments in life, whether that be through the Susan G. Komen Foundation, that was founded because Susan G. Komen died of breast cancer at a young age, and her sister started the foundation. Or like Matt Walsh, who does a show to highlight criminals and get them behind bars after his son was violently kidnapped and killed at a young age. People oftentimes, in many walks of life, find meaning in life in their most difficult and troublesome times. And so I encourage people, you know, search your most difficult times, search your passion, search and find, you know, ways to attach purpose to what you do. We used to have a Super Bowl party, which, you know, it's a big football event here in the United States, especially. But we would have people over and we would say, you know, don't bring anything except for donations to the local food pantry. So we would add meaning and purpose to, you know, a great party that we had. And that made it more. It made it better. And it makes life, meaningful, right? So, you know, I would say when it comes to finding passion and keeping going, in life, even when it feels like you keep, you know, taking three steps back and two steps forward, when you have meaning and purpose, that's when the chips are down, that's what keeps you going, I believe. And, it's very important.
Yeah, and sometimes another aspect of it is to trust, to have faith that the outcome is going to be good, right? Even if it seems very dreary now. So yeah, this finding purpose and meaning, I think that's very interesting, because in the Course in Miracles it says things like, in its lessons, it has 365 lessons. And some of them will say, for instance, nothing I see means anything, or things like that. Or let me see that if they come back to me. But there's a whole lot of these lessons where you learn to be able to change your mind about them. So it's like, for instance, being angry never is justified, or being mad is one of a thought that comes there in different words. I'm not using the same words that it uses in the book. But anyways, things like that. And it's really interesting when you think about it. Okay, I don't know the meaning of this, or I don't know what anything is for, is another thought like that, right? So you can open up to the option that there is a higher meaning to everything. There's purpose and a deeper purpose. And like you were speaking of the passage where it says everything can be used by God for good, right? Everything. There's nothing that cannot be used for good. And like you were saying, that's a really tall order, and it's a beautiful order though. Like there's no degree in difficulty in miracles. There's no miracle that is impossible, right? Every miracle is possible. Thoughts like that are really, really powerful. Or like you were saying, God sees you as innocent, as holy, as complete, right? As the child of God. So these are thoughts, you know, like, wow, if that's true, what else is true, right?
Yeah, right. I mean, the Bible makes some audacious promises. You know, I can do all things through God who strengthens me. I can turn all things to good. But again, it's an option. You know, it's can. God, you know, can make all things work for good. But you have to be dedicated to him, in my opinion, and his purposes for you in your life. And that's where you search for purpose, right? And yeah, it's if we're headed in the right direction and our head's on straight, and you know, for me, that's I'm doing God's will. I'm following his purpose for me in my life, which is based on his word, then yeah, that gives me, you know, the strength that I need to go forward a lot of times during the most difficult times.
Yeah, it's a very powerful thing to think about also, that, for instance, the idea of freedom, it comes through God's will, not through our own separation thinking, not through separation thinking. It comes through the joining with the will that is the will for the highest good of all, right? Of our highest good. And we don't even know what that looks like. So we have to listen to the one who does know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's frustrating, right? That's that's hard to do because, like I said, this isn't the life that I would have chosen, and it's frustrating because God's understands more than I do, obviously, and you know, that's when I, on my first day in jail, I was shown to my cell, given my stripes, checked in. Shown to my cell and given a bologna sandwich, which was horrid. And then it was lockdown for CO, the change, shift change. And they sent me, you know, they put you in your 8x10 cell, which you're in with another inmate. And as I laid down on my bed to wait out the next couple hours of lockdown, written above my head where I would be staying for the next several days were the words, "God, show me your will." And yeah, wouldn't that be nice? I would like to know. I think I know maybe now. I don't though. And I'm just doing what I feel I've been called to do. There's a passage in Deuteronomy, and hopefully I can find it here real quick. Yeah, it says, "Live in his presence in holy reverence. Follow the road he sets out for you. Love him, serve your God." not the road that I was hoping to drive, but the road that's been set out before me. And you know, I've been given what I've been given, as far as that goes. And, you know, in faith, you go forward, on the road that you have been given, and you do it to the best of your ability.
Yeah, I thought that was a beautiful reflection, the recognition that I don't know what God's will is, right? And I'm not the one to determine what God's will is. So yeah, this is a very, very powerful thing, is this trusting in the will of God being the will, the one will that unifies us, that brings peace to everyone and to everything. While the will that we think we need to, sometimes think we need to follow, or often actually follow, is the will of separation, where that doesn't feel that way, right? And we also tend to fight against the will for that is peaceful and joyful and freeing. So how did you, and so I think you must have developed a way of continuing despite that fight within you against the will of love and joy and happiness.
Yeah, again, it's just, you know, bring up a child in the way they should go. And when they grow up, they won't stray from it or something like that. Yeah, you know, I guess, you know, I just had faith in the Word of God. From my experience, it had shown to be true. And while I don't always like what it, the message that it gives me, you know, it is my foundation. And you know, going forward, you know, that's what I rely on. So it is my guide, and that gives me confidence. And you know, in what I'm doing, and I constantly am evaluating what I'm doing and how I'm doing it based on, you know, what my understanding of the Bible is. And, you know, I try to, follow the ways of love, which is patience, kindness, and forgiveness and selflessness and all that good stuff. But, and that's, you know, I go forth in faith that, there is a will, there is, you know, very few people don't believe in anything. I think that's one of the things you learn in AA, is that, you know, they're most people believe in some type of higher power. Nobody believes that they are just their own God, or very few people, I should say, believe that they are their own God. Most everybody believes in a higher power. And whatever that higher power is, you know, it's important to acknowledge that, and to acknowledge that, that we don't know everything. Again, it is what it is. I've got the life that I've got. And you know, now it's up to me. What am I going to do with it? Am I going to be bitter, or am I going to be better? Is this going to be a stumbling block or a stepping stone? You know, how can I learn from this, and what can I learn from this about forgiveness, about moving forward, about finding purpose in life? When we start focusing our minds and our thinking, you know, the possibilities of this, what can this mean, and how can it be helpful and useful to others? Then we stop looking at, you know, the stuff that we didn't want in life as burdens, and more as, you know, I should say, less as liabilities and more as assets to who we are as people and how we mature. You know, I've got a friend, and he speaks, and his wife is very ill, had a lot of medical health issues over the years, really ever since they've been married. And one year he decided that, you know, he's a huge fan of Shackleton and teaches based on his principles. And one year he decided that he was going to do a marathon or a half marathon, I don't know, down in Antarctica. And the other day, you know, his wife was having a particular struggle, and so was he. And I asked him how he was doing, and he said, you know, this is why I went to Antarctica. This is why I went down there, so that I could do the hard things. And I think that that's a really great message to everybody. You know, what's best for us isn't always the easiest things, but what prepares us for the most difficult times in our lives is not always choosing to do the easy things, not always choosing to take the easy path, try, I think, as much as we can to choose the hard way. And from that we learn and we grow. And so, you know, I firmly believe that God's will and understanding is far above my own, and whatever I've been given, if he says it can be used for a greater purpose, then who am I to argue with that?
Yeah, that's very powerful to say. Who am I to argue with that? This has purpose. God says, come on, go out and speak. Share your story. Speak about it. Let people know. And don't hold back. And whatever else, right? But coming through. Yeah, who are we to argue with that? Yeah. We may argue with it as long as we like, but in the end, we'll probably do it anyways. So yeah, thank you for this conversation. It was great. Do you have anything you'd like to answer to that I haven't asked?
No, you know, just, I shouldn't say no. just, you know, a quick thought that, yeah, life can get tough sometimes and life can get difficult. And, you know, there are those summits and there are those struggles. And like my daughter said, adulting, my daughter, she said that adulting is hard. And just everyday life can beat us down, and you know, we, you know, make it hard to have, you know, a good mental state of well-being, and just, you know, keep going forward every day, and just remember that, you know, there's always better days ahead, no matter what you're going through, no matter how deep and dark the valley is. I think I've been there, maybe more than once, and there is a way out. I don't care how deep and dark that valley is, and I pray that that is comfort to some going through it.
Thank you. Yeah, if anyone wants to reach out to you and get to know you or whatever else you're offering, how would they do that?
Yeah, thanks for that. I really enjoy being on podcasts, but my goal is to do more public speaking opportunities. And you can always reach me at jeff@jeff-higgins.com. That's jeff@jeff-higgins.com. And of course, the website then is jeff-higgins.com. com. And yeah, you can reach me on Facebook. I'd love to hear your feedback and your comments. It's under Struggles and Summits on my face is my Facebook page. And I'd love to hear from you. And I just appreciate the opportunity to be with everybody today. Thank you very much.
That's also from my side. Thank you for joining us, for listening, for supporting the podcast. Please share about it so that more people hear about it. If you like it a lot or a little less, please leave a review and subscribe and let people know about it. And if you want to be a guest, please reach out to me. And if you want to join the live recordings as well, you can reach out to me or join if you find the links, because they're pretty much everywhere I streams as well. So thank you so much. And